It's Saturday, July 30th, 2005. I'm Alan Joyce, and this is the Everything Digital Podcast.
Podcasting almost live.
The Everything Digital Podcast. If it's digital, you're going to hear about it. Unless it's Windows.
Hey, Everything Digital Podcast. Pretty eventful week this week. A whole lot of new Apple stuff, new iBooks, new Mac Minis, some Windows stuff as well. Of course, not as important. Plenty of tech news this week as opposed to last week, which was, a really boring week as far as tech news. Not a whole lot went on last week, that is to say, last podcast week, which is the week before last week, the week that week, this week, which is last week, was better. Okay, I'm. It's too late. It's 10:45 p.m. Not that late actually, but I like to do a podcast about this time. But obviously my speech has gone. But I've never been really familiar with the week system. This week, next week, the week after next week. Which week is which week? No one knows. The week of the 24th. There we go. Okay, this intro music is from Verbal Kint. This is Sea Breeze. This is, of course, off GarageBand.com. Although, actually now, not so much of course, because the PodSafe Music Network, of course, it's of course making a big debut in the podcasting industry, if we can call it an industry. And I haven't switched over to it yet. I'm not using any podcast music network files yet. I'm sticking with GarageBand for now. No real major reasons. Just it's been good for me, and I like the interface of GarageBand.com, and I'm going to keep using it, getting good music out of it. All right, let's go to those 5 5-second news headlines. Century Fox has added its support to Sony's Blu-ray high-definition DVD disc and is planning Blu-ray film and television content. Senator Ted Stevens recently warned peer-to-peer networks that legislative action will be taken if they do not prevent illegal file sharing. Hackers have already found a way around the protection offered by Microsoft's new Windows Genuine Advantage anti-piracy software designed to stop illegal copies of Windows. And AOL is currently testing several new mobile services to be available in the United States that will allow cell phones to access AOL search. And Tapwave's Zodiac handheld gaming console has been discontinued by the company due to losses suffered from the success of the PSP. And those are just the short headlines. There are, as always, links to full stories in the show notes at everythingdigital.org. Alright. So, first item on the agenda, believe it or not, is Windows-related. There's a lot of Apple news coming up, but right now, a little bit of Windows news. The first test version of Windows Vista has been released. The test version is called Beta 1, surprisingly enough, and it was released to 10,000 programmers and tech professionals. The final release is still scheduled for late 2006. Yeah, I know. I think XP must have been released like 2001, 2002 maybe. That's a long time between operating systems. That's a really long time. The beta focuses on security and manageability functions, and it includes user account protection and multi-user switching, features which were seen in Apple's Panther 10.3 operating system. Also, the new beta enhances data protection by storing encryption keys on a specialized chip and includes Internet Explorer 7 with increased security and tabbed browsing, a feature that Internet Explorer has long lacked, and recently that feature was provided by the MSN toolbar, but still not actually built in, so we finally got it built in with Internet Explorer 7, of course not actually released to the public, but it is released to these 10,000 programmers and tech professionals, so at least they get to enjoy the tab browsing on a Internet Explorer browser. Also, there is an improved sleep state, which combines the Windows standby and hibernate status. And this feature is catching up to Apple's, any Apple OS X OS. A feature that Windows computers have long lacked is the ability to really spring out of a sleep state or a hibernate state or a standby state, however you want to call it. And that's one of the great things about the OS X powered, especially laptops, because you know you flip the lid open and before you're even able to flip it all the way up, the screen is already there. You've already got any files you had open are still open. They're all right there. Any applications, all that, it's right there. And that's something that is sort of taken for granted now, at least among Mac users. Windows, there's sort of a hibernate state where you can partially shut it down. It does the same thing where it dumps the RAM to the hard drive, but it takes a little longer to start back up. There's a little screen where it goes resuming Windows, the infamous resuming Windows screen, which is almost as bad as a full startup. So not particularly good there, but apparently fixed in this the beta of Longhorn or Windows Vista. The beta release was originally set for August 3rd, so far ahead of schedule as far as the beta schedule, but definitely behind schedule as far as the final release. The next beta is supposed to be released to a larger audience later this year. No exact date on that, but should be interesting once more people get a hold of it. Not average users, of course, but more people who like the press, people who might be able to review it. You know, we could get some hands-on reviews and things out there, although there probably already are a couple due to this 10,000 programmer and tech professional release. So that's the test version of Windows Vista. See where that's going, although I've got to say I'm not particularly excited about it, what with the recent 10.4 Tiger release. I'm not too concerned about Windows Vista, but hey, if you own a Windows machine, it's going to be a really nice upgrade once that update finally comes around. Now on to the more exciting news. We've got new iBooks and new Mac Minis out on the market now. Just going to run through the stats here, and there are a lot of them. First of all, the new iBooks are not going to be widescreen. That was a rumor that was posted on a couple websites. I actually posted it myself a couple days ago. And with, of course, a message saying this is probably a fake because the image did look a little photoshopped. It was supposedly a screenshot of the Apple webpage displaying the new widescreen iBooks. But it wasn't very convincing, and it wasn't very true either. So not widescreen, although that would be interesting in an iBook. I don't think it's really what Apple is going for. The iBooks are more of student, non-power user, so don't really need widescreen. The portability is much more important on those. The interesting thing, though, is now they all have 512 megabytes of built-in RAM instead of 256 megabytes. They also have a 32 megabyte Mobility Radeon 9, 9550 graphics card. which is a slight upgrade, but still 32 megabytes, which is the same as the previous card. Also, they have the anti-damage motion sensor, which prevent the hard drive corruption when you drop the computer. Also are shipping with that new trackpad feature where you can use two fingers to scroll up and down like you would on a scroll wheel, sort of trying to make up for the fact that there isn't a scroll wheel in the Apple Mouse, and of course not in the anywhere on the laptops, but there is not a scroll wheel on the Apple stock mouse, which you can buy. And, of course, scroll wheel is definitely something I've come to use constantly. Not sure how easy it is to learn the two-finger method rather than a scroll wheel, but definitely an interesting substitute and something, well, trackpad users would have to get used to. Something that's shipping in the new iBooks, though. And always a nice feature to have along. Bluetooth 2.0 is also coming with them, and 802.11g Wi-Fi is built in, and that was not built in before. It used to be you had to get an Airport Extreme card extra. It had an Airport Express, but you had to get an Airport, or not an Airport Express, Airport, just regular Airport, like a B, 802.11b, not an 802.11g Wi-Fi card. And the Bluetooth is new. That wasn't there before. Also, there's some improvements on the individual models. So for the 12-inch model, it's been kicked up to 1.33 gigahertz with a 133 megahertz front side bus, DVD-ROM/CD-RW combo drive, a 60-gigabyte hard drive for $999, which is a pretty good price point for a computer like that. Also, the 14-inch model is at 1.42 gigahertz, 142 megahertz front side bus, DVD-R/CD-RW super drive, an 80-gigabyte hard drive for $1,299. Not $1,299, but $1,299. So a little more expensive there, and a little more powerful. The DVD burning capability is definitely big, although if you do have some sort of external DVD burning method, it's probably not worth the extra $300 for that, and a slightly faster processor, a slightly higher capacity hard drive. But I'd say the deal here is the $999 12-inch. So interesting upgrades there. Probably a very nice feature. Something that's going to come in really handy is the built-in Bluetooth for Bluetooth headsets, Bluetooth mice, keyboard, all that. Using your computer anywhere. And actually, I have a little tip. Speaking of Bluetooth, this is completely unrelated. This wasn't even in my notes, but I have a great tip for Bluetooth mouse and keyboard users. If you want to use your computer away from your screen, so say you're across the room and you want to do something on another computer that's hooked up to a mouse and keyboard that are wireless, all you got to do is on that computer, you go into System Preferences, and I believe it's Accessibility, so it's Universal Access, there we go. And what you're going to want to do is enable zooming. So you will, this is for people who can't read the screen very well. So you can have the computer zoom in and out for you to get closer to the type so you can read it. So then what you can do is you can hold down the Apple key, the Option key, and then plus or minus, and you can zoom in and out of the screen. So if you've got a wireless mouse and keyboard somewhere else and you use the zoom option, it's almost like you've got your computer right there. You can zoom in to the point where you can read the type from across the room. And it really does zoom in pretty far. So it makes it actually useful to be able to have a wireless setup and use your computer from a distance. Just a little tip there. Something just crossed my mind. I've been using it for a while, but I'm not sure if it's a very common solution or not. New Mac Minis, also another introduction in the past week. We got a 32-megabyte Mobility Radeon 9200 graphics card in those. And we've also got 512 megabytes of RAM built in. Another upgrade there. It used to be 256, so same as the iBooks. They're kicking the RAM up to 512 megabytes. Also, we got three models here. One is the 1.25 gigahertz model, and the other two are 1.42 gigahertz models. And then there is a slight difference. One comes with a combo drive and one with a super drive with the DVD burning capabilities. So in the 1.25 gigahertz model, the entry-level model, we've got a 40 gigabyte hard drive, combo drive for $499. What a price point. Of course, it's bring your own mouse, keyboard, monitor, all that stuff. But a lot of people have those laying around anyway. So good price point there, Apple. Of course, that hasn't changed since the Mac Mini was introduced, but nice to see they're keeping the prices low on that. Also, then we've got the two 1.42 gigahertz models with 80 gigabyte hard drives, and those have Bluetooth 2.0 and 802.11g Wi-Fi built in. So that's a new thing, and that is quite good. $599 for the combo drive model and $699 for the super drive model. Now, the weird thing in this, and there's been a lot of speculation about this, but the entry-level model on the Mac Mini does have a modem port. However, the 1.42 gigahertz models, the second and third models, do not have a built-in modem port. So that's actually an extra option there. Of course, then you have the Wi-Fi, which you don't have on the entry-level model. So I guess they're figuring people who are going to buy the $499 one are probably more likely to have dial-up than people who are going to buy the more advanced ones with the Wi-Fi built in. But an interesting development nevertheless, and of course with ever more people switching to broadband, and a huge, probably more Apple users than anything else switching to broadband and higher tech connection services, probably a wise move to just be able to scratch the modem there, and then that way you can save the cost on that to install other things like the Bluetooth and the Wi-Fi. So, got some PodSafe music here. This is from Jonathan Colton, an artist that I really enjoy listening to, and someone that's featured on a couple podcasts that I know of. This song, actually, I first heard on Dave Slusher's Evil Genius Chronicles, and he played the live version. It was on some television show, and he explained this song. It's actually about an NPR newscaster in New York, and he every morning Jonathan Colton would wake up to this newscaster's voice, and he decided to write a song about it. So this is the song about Sotirios Johnson, the NPR newscaster in New York. This is Jonathan Colton, Dance, Sotirios Johnson, Dance.
Voice like honey, no one else could fill his shoes. The time and the weather, headlines and the local news. He lays it down with perfection and grace. Done by noon, he goes home to his place, where he sleeps and he waits for the night. Just before midnight, he wakes up, gets out of bed. A can of Red Bull, a tab of X to clear his head. He shoots his cups, now he's headed downtown. Picks up one life, puts another one down, and it
Satirious Johnson dance. It's a cold world nobody understands. It's a feeling you can't keep inside. Go, Satirious Johnson, go. All the club kids are watching you glow stick glow at the light of a truth you can't hide. That the news is the news, but the dance goes on forever. Shimmies the shoulders, undulates his slender hips. Arms akimbo, jaggeresque, he pouts his lips. Crowd is formed, they are gathering round just to hear the incredible sound of a genius smashing expectations. Dance, Satirious Johnson, dance. It's a cold world nobody understands. It's a feeling you can't keep inside. Go, Satirious Johnson, go. All the club kids are watching you glow stick glow at the light of a truth you can't hide. That the news is the news, but the dance goes. As the sun comes up, it's time he goes. He takes a quick shower, a shave, puts on off his clothes. He hails a cab in the early gray dawn, gets to work and turns his microphone on. And his dulcet tones wake up this city. Dance, Satirious Johnson, dance. It's a cold world nobody understands. It's a feeling you can't keep inside. Satirious Johnson, go. All the club kids are watching you glow stick glow at the light of a truth you can't hide. That the news is the news, but the dance goes on. News is the news, but the dance goes on. The news is the news, but the dance goes on forever.
All right, Satirious Johnson, dance, or... Yes, that song was made by Satirious Johnson. No, that's Jonathan Colton. Dance, Satirious Johnson, dance. So HP is going to stop selling iPods, according to Ryan Donovan, an HP spokesperson. He says, "I can confirm that we have exited the relationship." Very informative quote there. We also know that the Wall Street Journal has reported that HP will immediately phase out all iPod sales. So bad news for HP, bad news for Apple. Not, of course, the iPod won't be in as many retail outlets now, and HP won't be making the extra money off of licensing and selling the iPod. I can't see why they would exit the relationship now, when it would seem all the could be happening would be them making money. They're just selling something that another company is producing, and then they also get to sell their own custom printable tattoo things, or whatever they were calling them, that were the special HP tattoos, and they didn't even have to make the device. So, but here's the thing. An Apple spokesperson, Katie Cotton, has said that they've decided that reselling iPods doesn't fit with their company's current digital media strategy. Now, there's various degrees to which you can look into this quote. So the first is, you know, they don't want to sell iPods anymore. It's just not working for them, probably a result of the recent layoffs. One of the big executives in the company leaving. HP's not doing too good right now. They don't need this complication with digital media. They don't need this iPod deal. Now, the other way to read it is doesn't fit with the company's current digital media strategy. Maybe HP's planning something else. Are they making their own player that they hope will rival the iPod? Are they making a deal with someone who makes their own player that would rival the iPod? Are they doing something with music that doesn't fit with Apple's actions as far as the music industry? Are they planning to compete with Apple? So that's something we're going to have to see. Now, we know HP is not really in a great state right now. As I said, the massive layoffs and not a whole lot of good stuff going on over there. They shut down like five of their research projects, and definitely not thriving. So we'll see what happens. Maybe they're shutting down some of their research projects to devote more to this secretive digital media strategy. Just speculation here. Also, the film industry has finally come together and decided that digital projection will be coming to a screen near you. They have released uniform specifications, which were set by the Digital Cinema Initiatives Group, which is a corporation incorporating Disney, 20th Century Fox, Paramount, Sony, Universal, and Warner Brothers Studios. So pretty much every major Hollywood studio is coming together on this, and they've decided that theaters no longer need film reels. They are hoping that in the future they can put use this standard to use digital methods to transmit high-definition movies directly to theaters. So no film reels, you don't have to transport the film reels, don't have to produce the film reels. Now, the only problem here is that the digital projection equipment, the actual projection equipment that will take this high-definition movie that was transferred to the movie theater, that will actually take that and project it. That is the equipment that gets really costly, because those projectors are not cheap. And the question here is, who's going to pay for it? Are the Hollywood studios going to pay for it in hopes of getting their movies to a better quality for their movies when they're shown in theaters? Or are the individual theaters going to pay for it in hopes of attracting more people because their movies have better image quality? Or is there going to be some sort of compromise? Well, that's still got to be worked out. I think a lot of people are hoping that it's just going to go away, that the digital projectors are going to get cheaper. But the problem is, by the time they get cheaper, there's going to be a whole other standard of high definition, and you're going to need projectors that comply with this whole other standard. And those are going to be just as expensive as the ones nowadays for the current HD standards. So definitely a problem there, although it's good that they've finally come together and united on this one standard, because digital projection is definitely something that could really help the theater experience and really revolutionize the way that it works. You know, no more like when there's a bad reel and you've got every 10 seconds this blotch comes across the screen or something, or all the little marks and stuff that get on the film reel, those would all be gone, because it'd just be a digital transmission, and the worst you'd have would be the occasional blip or little corruption due to the transmission not being full. But of course they do their best to ensure that doesn't happen, and it'd be a whole lot less than nowadays with the film reels. So something, actually a couple theaters have already put into place systems like this, but it is certainly not universal. So that's gonna be good. Good for the industry, the movie industry, and good for the viewers. Also, a project that I've been working on, ongoing for several months now. First, I don't know exactly when it was, but I took my iTrip, the FM transmitter from my iPod, and I tried to extend its range. I've always been disappointed with the range it gives. So I went inside it. There's these two little rubber insulators on the side, two on each side. So I just took those off and used a combination of a pair of tweezers and a string, or actually it was a wire, and I poked it inside and was able to move the antenna just a bit, was able to sort of arc it up instead of its usual compressed sort of... it's usually held down within the container. So I pushed it up a bit in hopes of giving it a little better range, and it did work. It gave it a significantly better range, but still not enough as far as I'm concerned. So just recently, I decided to have another go at it and again took off the panels. This time, I went for a more hands-on approach, a more... destructive approach, you might say, although it actually ended up, it turned out pretty good. I took a knife and I took some tweezers, actually two pairs of tweezers, and I opened up one of the panels on the side, actually the right side, in case you're doing this right now as I speak, if you want me to run through the steps here, on the right side, took the top panel off, stuck a knife in there, cut from the top panel to the top of the I-trip, and then cut halfway across the top of the I-trip, right along the center seam. So now I've got this hole on the center and top of the side of the I-trip, and then I was able to just use some tweezers to pry that hole open just long enough to take another pair of tweezers, put them inside the hole, and take the take hold of the antenna, and slowly thread it out through the small hole, and then I was able to redirect the antenna through the small hole where the rubber insulator was, so now it's just poking out the side there, and then I was actually able to replace the rubber insulator over where the antenna comes out, and was able to give it a pretty clean look. There's really not much scarring. There's a little bit of a separation where I cut the along the seam, not too much. It's actually more firm than it was before, because before the chip inside used to move around when I shook it, but now since the antenna is being held in place with this the rubber insulator, it actually also holds the chip in place because the antenna is attached to the chip. So when I shake it, there's no more rattling noise. So I fixed that and extended the range all in one try. And so I'm pretty happy with it. I haven't done a full test on it, but from just little tests, it seems to be working pretty well. And of course, now that I've got the antenna completely outside and in the open, I can go ahead and attach an external antenna or a secondary antenna or an extension to the antenna, an amplifier, that would improve the range a whole lot. So I'm pretty happy with that, and there's a description of how I did it in text format and also some pictures of the final product on my Flickr website. I've got a link to the post where I have the text description in the show notes, so you can click on that, and there's a link to the photos from there, or you can just go to flickr.com/photos/everythingdigital, and the iTrip photo should be pretty recent on my stream. All right, so with that, got some outro music here, and then that's going to be it. This is from the Rich Hall Experience. This is Future Hope. And now I'm going to run through all this contact info here. The website is everythingdigital.org. You can, of course, post comments there. You can subscribe to the podcast-only feed at everythingdigital.org/rss.xml if all you want to receive is the MP3s. Or you can subscribe to the podcast and text news feed at everythingdigital.org/weblog/index.xml. And with that, you get both the MP3 files and the text news that I post on the site. You can email me, alan@everythingdigital.org. You can Skype me, everythingdigital. You can AOL Instant Messenger, I am me. Podcaster is the screen name. You can call 206-9-THE-EDP. And leave an audio comment. That's 206-984-3337. Also, the sponsorship offer still stands if anyone wants to sponsor the show. It is $10 for one show, and a pretty good deal if you ask me. I based on stats, I get about 1,000 downloads per show. Not sure how many regular subscribed listeners, but that's that. I don't think it's a bad price. Maybe I want to sponsor myself. That's what I'm going to do. I think it's a good deal, so I'm going to sponsor myself. I'm going to pay myself $10 for a one-show sponsorship, and the next show will be sponsored by the Everything Digital Podcast. If it's digital, you're going to hear about it. All right, thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.